We're talking about medical debt now in the COVID crisis and surprise medical bills. It is the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. There is secrecy around healthcare prices. And for years, New York Times investigative journalist Sarah Cliff has tried to lift the veil and go line by line on the medical bills that people send to her. And now she's digging into what people are being charged when they get tested or treated for COVID-19. According to the Peterson Kaiser Family Foundation, surprise bills are hard to avoid, where you inadvertently receive care from an out-of-network provider and you get stuck with the bill. Have you received a surprise medical bill? What happened? Do you have COVID-related hospital stay bills? What questions do you have about the charges? 800-642-1234. Sarah Cliff, welcome back to the Ideas Network.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
You're finding that some physicians are not ordering COVID tests for their patients due to extremely low reimbursement rates. What is going on?
Yeah, this is just a new story I published earlier today. What we see going on, and this seems to be concentrated among pediatricians, we don't fully understand why, is that certain insurance companies are paying less than the cost of testing supplies. So I'll give you an example of a pediatrician I talked to in Denver who says it costs about $41 for her to purchase a test kit. One of her major insurance companies is only sending back $21 each time she runs that test. And you can quickly see how the math just doesn't add up. So that particular provider has decided not to test patients with that insurance in office. She's going to send those results out. And that means the results are going to take days to come back instead of minutes. So this is really kind of the exact opposite of what you want. I think we want more testing infrastructure to make it easier to people to monitor themselves for coronavirus, but you have these insurance reimbursement rates that are pushing some providers in the opposite direction.
And this is happening with a large private insurer, United Healthcare. Why is it alarming that this isn't just a Medicare and Medicaid issue with reimbursement rates?
Yeah, usually providers are used to lower reimbursement rates from government programs. This would be Medicaid, which covers low-income Americans, and Medicare, which covers the elderly. But usually the private insurers pay the highest prices. So I think a number of providers are quite surprised to see United Healthcare, you know, a major health insurance company, one that did quite well last year because of all the care all of us delayed, paying such low reimbursement rates. Now, I will say United says they believe that the reimbursement rates are appropriate, that they are covering the tests. They encourage providers to reach out to them if that is not the case. But the providers I've talked to, they say they have done that outreach and they haven't really gotten a resolution.
So if you bring your child into the pediatrician with symptoms, say like a high fever, should you expect a COVID test, or how does it compare to the cost of a test for influenza?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think it really, really varies so much by, you know, what clinic you're walking into. Mm-hmm. You know, some providers I talk to, their reimbursement rates are fine and they're testing anyone who feels like they need a test where the provider also agrees it's clinically appropriate. Some are deciding not to do any testing because of the losses they would sustain. And some are deciding who to test by what health insurance they have. So it's really hard to know as a patient kind of how the reimbursement is factoring into your own care. Another thing that providers are thinking about too is the quality of the test. I think there's some hesitance to use these in-office rapid antigen tests with asymptomatic patients because they've been shown to be less accurate. So there's a whole bunch of factors that kind of go into providers deciding which test to provide. And I think, you know, what I'm showing in this story, reimbursement has become one of those factors that they're thinking about.
If you're just joining us, Sarah Cliff is with us, investigative reporter for the New York Times, focusing on our healthcare system, how it works for patients during the pandemic. She's been covering COVID-related medical billing. You can join in with your questions about medical billing, especially amid the pandemic, 800-642-1234. Sarah, for the last, you know, 6 months or so, you've been crowdsourcing medical bills specifically on COVID and care around the pandemic and what the costs of those services are, especially with hospital stays. What are you finding?
Yeah, so I'm finding a lot of really interesting things. And essentially, you see all these things about our healthcare system that I knew just being revealed in such an important way, where you see all these kind of points that don't really work well in our healthcare system. All of that is just amped up by the coronavirus test, or coronavirus pandemic. So, you know, I'll mention a few things I've been seeing. I've been seeing a lot of illegal bills for coronavirus testing. That testing is generally supposed to be free when ordered by a doctor, but I'm seeing all sorts of cases of patients facing bills that they really should not be facing. I'm seeing some doctors profiting off the pandemic, and this is a small minority, but you do have a few providers who are tacking on all sorts of tests to their coronavirus test and billing, you know, as much as $2,000 for a single coronavirus test. And then in the treatment space, you know, I'm seeing a number of people end up with some pretty significant medical debt related to their coronavirus treatment. And, you know, there were special rules. Congress did write certain rules to try and protect people from those bills. They made a new fund for uninsured Americans. A lot of insurance companies agreed to waive cost sharing. Mm-hmm. But there are all these loopholes. There are out-of-network doctors. There are services that happen after the initial hospital stay that those rules don't apply to. So you really find all these holes in the American healthcare system that leave patients vulnerable. They're exposing themselves in spades when we have a pandemic raging in our country.
Let's bring in a personal situation here. Josh is joining us from Madison. Hi, Josh. What would you like to share?
My story isn't related to COVID, but it is related to, or I think it gives a general outline of how broken our medical system is. I'm 42, as is my wife, and we have a moderate insurance plan that is affordable to us on the marketplace. And in the last 6 months, I've been chasing some mysterious symptoms in my that I've been dealing with. And through just the testing portion of my medical experience, I have accumulated $10,000 in just diagnostic charges that I wasn't necessarily expecting. And it's just so that's just the diagnostic portion that I've gotten no answers from. And let's say this actually turns into something serious. I'm just almost certainly facing financial ruin. And you know, this is supposed to be the greatest country on earth. I don't believe that I should be. It should be that easy to get in this position.
Josh, appreciate you sharing this story. You know, I'm sure that, Sarah Cliff, you've heard portions of this story before. What would you advise Josh to do?
Yeah, you know, I feel so terrible because my advice isn't going to be great. This is just a really hard system for patients to navigate. The prices aren't transparent. So if you're someone who's doing a lot of testing, it can be really hard to know up front how much that testing is going to cost. Things, you know, seem completely random in terms of what you're being asked to pay. We know from numerous academic studies, there's huge variation in prices. But again, you don't really know what your price is until you receive the bill telling you how much to pay. You know, the thing I would do and the thing I do as a health consumer in my own life is, you know, I don't feel, you know, nervous or bad about asking providers about, you know, how much do you bill for this? And, you know, how much is this going to cost? I think providers often don't get those questions from patients, but I think as patients, we are completely within our rights to be asking those questions. And, you know, I think one of the things Joss mentioned is he's on a marketplace plan. These are the Affordable Care Act plans that rolled out in 2014. The hard thing with those tend to have pretty high deductible. So you have to pay a decent amount before your insurance kicks in. I would say when you're in your deductible, I'd be especially vigilant about, you know, asking providers what they pay or what they are going to charge you and how much you're going to have to pay.
Well, and it's difficult too with getting all of these diagnostic tests, the battery of tests, not getting to the root of the problem. And meanwhile, still having to be charged. I mean, as a consumer, it doesn't make sense.
Totally. Yeah. And again, you know, I, you know, offer this advice with a lot of caveats. Sometimes it can be really hard to get that information. Sometimes you can't find out how much a simple blood test, you know, costs at your local hospital, or your local doctor. There are some new rules here that might help consumers a little bit. The Obama administration, a number of years ago, they required hospitals to publish their sticker prices. So this is important. If you're uninsured, you can see what the price is before an insurer discount. The Trump administration published new rules that just went into effect January 1st that also require hospitals to post negotiated prices for some of their most common procedures. So that's literally the price your insurance pays your hospital. The data is limited. Hospitals are a little slow to comply. A number of them still haven't posted these yet. But that is one small thing that does make me a little bit optimistic about patients having a little more control. I think the hard thing and the place where a lot of people get stuck is even if you learn the price, that doesn't always protect you. If you really need that blood test, if there's only one hospital in your area that's going to do the particular scan you need, knowing the price doesn't help you that much. It just means you kind of know it's going to be really expensive.
We have investigative journalist Sarah Cliff of the New York Times explaining the financial crisis of medical debt, of surprise bills, and what she sees from patient bills in the pandemic. Did you contract COVID and need to stay in a hospital while you recovered? What were your medical bills like? What did your insurance company cover? What did they leave you to pay? Join in your situation, 800-642-1234. Back in a minute with Sarah Cliff here on the Ideas Network. You're with us for the morning show as we discuss the cost of healthcare in America. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Some insurance companies are waiving certain fees for COVID treatment, and there's help from the federal government. But medical debt, it looms large. There was a survey done by Debt.com over the summer found that 60% of respondents didn't try to negotiate their medical bills. Are you in collections now? What is that like? How are treatment costs for COVID affecting your family's finances? Join in 800-642-1234. Sarah Cliff is an investigative journalist at the New York Times who's been looking into the costs of treatment, and she's with us for the hour. Sarah, early on in the pandemic, when COVID tests were hard to come by, you found just wild fluctuation in the cost of these tests. Have the cost evened out? What is that like?
So it's hard to know exactly because all this information is pretty secret. One of the kind of overarching things that frustrates me about reporting on the healthcare system is that these the prices that insurance companies are paying hospitals are generally kept secret. Some new regulations I mentioned earlier will lift a little bit of that secrecy, but generally it's hard to make any blanket statements about what we're seeing in terms of cost. We do know what the federal government is doing. The federal government has had pretty routinely been paying $100 for coronavirus tests for Medicare patients. It dropped some of that reimbursement to $75 for labs that were taking a long time to return results, essentially to create an incentive to get those results back pretty quickly.
Yeah.
And we generally know from the data I've reviewed, most tests are around that 100 range, but then you have these outliers of providers billing really, really high amounts. The highest I've seen is $1,944.
For a single and also, test?
So for what patients thought was going to be a single coronavirus test, but turned out to be a test the provider tacked on, you know, a dozen other sort of nasal sample tests too.
Okay, so kind of layering of the testing or something like that.
Yeah, this is something we've seen a little bit of, both in public and private testing sites, of providers, you know, seeing an opportunity. They run drive-through sites. They swab your nose. They advertise it as a coronavirus testing site, except they actually, you know, test you for all sorts of things. I've seen people unexpectedly be tested for chlamydia, other STDs, for the flu, for RSV, when they just thought they were getting a coronavirus test. That's a way they can generate a lot more revenue. An insurance company is going to pay them more if they're doing all of these exams, even though they aren't quite indicated. You know, I've seen that both. I wrote a story about that happening at a public testing site in Connecticut. I've also seen it at standalone emergency rooms tend to be the most likely to bill that way.
Let's bring in Ahmed, who's joining us from Milwaukee. Hi, Ahmed.
Hello. I just wanted to kind of give a counter narrative to what your guest is advising. As a doctor, we are faced with immense stress, or doctors like myself are faced with immense stress to get more and more demanding patients out in and out of office visits quickly. If a person's there with a specialist like myself for more than an hour or two, they start to complain. But if every patient starts to also question the price of every single test or procedure or thing that I might do on that office visit, it makes it impossible to do that. So I do have patients like that who, you know, say it's my right to ask questions about the price. But the problem is I'm the doctor. I'm not the billing department. I don't know those things. And if I see them once and then send them for a test and then have, or sorry, if I see them, talk to them, explain why they need a test, then get the test, then see them again, it's impossible for the person to get in and out of the office like they want. And then every other patient is furious that they've been there for that long. So unless the public is willing to put up with multi-hour visits at specialists or people who offices where complex diseases are dealt with, I don't think this advice really works. I would suggest that anybody who has that kind of cost concern find out ahead of time before any office visit what that price list is, what the negotiated rates are, what common tests may be performed, and all of those things before they ever get to the doctor's office. Because for a doctor, it's extremely frustrating to have to deal with these type of questions during an office visit.
Ahmed, thank you so much for your perspective. Sarah Cliff, what would you like to say?
Yeah, no, I think that's a fair point to raise, that often providers are caught in these conversations where patients want to know the prices. They have a busy schedule. They aren't the ones setting the prices. It can be a frustrating situation for everyone. But I'd say I don't think this requires, you know, multi-hour visits for patients. I think, you know, the easiest way to solve this problem would be providers, you know, like the caller, providers like hospitals and doctors, to just post their prices online, to post those negotiated rates so patients can do their research and not have to ask those questions at the doctor office. I think one of the things that patients can often find challenging about researching their costs beforehand is they don't know what tests are going to be ordered. They don't know, you know, if the visit is going to, most visits in the United States are billed on a level of 1 to 5 for complexity. They don't know if their visit is going to be a number one visit or a number five visit. It's really hard to do that research in advance because you don't quite know what it is that's going to happen at your doctor appointment. But I do think it could solve a lot of headache for doctors, a lot of headaches for patients if we just made all these prices public.
We're talking with Sarah Cliff, investigative reporter for The New York Times, looking into medical bills, especially amid COVID, and what they tell us about how our healthcare system functions in America. With your insights as well, 800-642-1234. Sarah, we heard from Joe in Lake Halley, called in, couldn't stay with us. Joe is wondering if people who want to pay cash and not pay with their insurance, do they get better prices for the services in that healthcare setting?
It can vary, but I have seen this. I've seen certain cases where someone, when I was doing a project on emergency room billing a few years ago, I ran into a few examples where someone went to the emergency room, there was some mix up and their insurance wasn't billed. Their process is uninsured. They went to the hospital and said, oh, no, I have insurance, gave them the insurance information. And their bill actually went up because they lost their uninsured discount and had some kind of cost sharing they had to pay. So it's a bit of a wild west. I mean, generally, I think you're going to get a better deal if you have health insurance because they're negotiating prices. They are paying some share of your bill. But there's always exceptions. And some people do get caught in this really frustrating situation of providing their health insurance and then being pretty surprised to see their bill go up.
Let's bring in Sue now in Menominee, Michigan. Hi, Sue. Oh, Sue is not there. And Sue is saying, you know, people have to be careful and investigate their bill. But with all the medical codes, it's really hard to decipher what is going on in that bill. Can you help us with that?
Totally. I totally empathize with that. And I think it's really unfortunate that patients are often put in this position of being a medical billing detective when they, you know, don't know the codes. And often the bills you receive will not have detailed information. They might not tell you, you know, how your bill was coded. They just might say, here's the amount you owe, without itemizing the services.
And you can do that. You can get away with that.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, 100%. You can get away with that. Patients, again, one of the things I see again and again in my reporting is patients can ask for things. They can ask for a discount. They can ask for the prices. They can ask for an itemized bill. But they're kind of at the mercies of the provider if the provider wants to say yes or no to that request. The recommendations, I would have, one is asking for an itemized bill, and hopefully they will provide that to you. You can do some research yourself online. If it's a very large bill, you know, one that would have serious financial consequences, there are professional patient advocates in this country who do this work for a living and will help you navigate a complex billing situation. But mostly I just have empathy for the question. It's really unfortunate that patients, you know, have to try and bone up on their medical billing when they have so much else going on in their lives and, you know, are having to have this as one more thing they're dealing with.
New York Times investigative reporter Sarah Cliff helping us understand the inner workings of medical billing and by extension, how our healthcare system works in our country. Have you gotten an outrageous medical bill recently? What did you do about it? Have you challenged the costs or contacted your insurance company? What did they say? Where is it at now? Be part of this. 800-642-1234. You can email ideas at WPR.org. We'll pick this up with Sarah Cliff right after this news update. Stay with us on the Ideas Network. We're talking about medical debt and being unexpectedly billed for out-of-pocket care not covered by a health insurance policy. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. So federal legislation is afoot. It's called the Stop Surprise Medical Bills Act. It was part of the year-end government spending bill with consumer protections kicking in next year. Do you think healthcare will be different under the Biden administration? How meticulously do you pore over your medical bills looking for incorrect billing? Do you look up what all the medical codes mean for services rendered? Join in 800-642-1234. New York Times investigative journalist Sarah Cliff is our guide for the hour. Let's bring in Karen now in Madison. Hi, Karen. What's your story?
Hi, I was trying to be a good medical consumer not too long ago, and I had a mammogram coming up. So I did call around to a number of different providers and try to do some price comparison. But I ran into the roadblock that a provider wouldn't even talk to me. Not the provider, the billing department for the provider would not even give me the time of day if I were not already a patient in that system. Then if I did contact a system where I was already a patient, they refused to give me information until they actually had the test billed. They insisted that they couldn't tell me how much a procedure would cost until a billing was generated. I continued to drill down on that because it sounded ridiculous. And it turns out that, as you mentioned earlier, there can be five different levels of scrutiny for a particular test. So a mammogram could be ordered for diagnostic purposes or for preventative purposes or for several purposes. So each one bills differently. So this idea of calling around to get a good competitive price or to at least become an informed consumer is not so easy. It's all well and good that we tell people that they should call around and find out, but that is no easy task.
Karen, thank you. Karen, you know, couldn't shop around for something as simple as a mammogram, Sarah.
Yeah, and I totally empathize with that situation. Like I was saying, you know, there's only so many times you can call a billing department, and if they're not going to release this information to you, you end up pretty stuck. And I think, you know, at this point, you run up against the fact that this isn't really, you know, we've talked about ways consumers can protect themselves and, you know, what they can do better. At the end of this day, this isn't really a problem an individual can solve. You know, if you look at pretty much every other developed country except the United States, what they do differently is they regulate their healthcare prices. They essentially think of healthcare as something as important like energy or water. It's so crucial to their citizens that the government has a role to step in and set an appropriate price to make sure it remains affordable to the people who live in those countries. And so if you look at Canada, European countries, Australia, many Asian countries, they all regulate their healthcare prices. You know, the United States has made a decision not to do that. We let healthcare price providers set their own prices. And so that really, that's the thing that patients are running up against is the fact that there is going to be such huge variation in our system because of the policy decisions, you know, that our leaders have made.
We're going to look more at policy a bit later, but I want to switch gears back to COVID. What are you seeing in terms of reimbursement rates for COVID-19 vaccines?
Yeah, we don't really know a lot about this yet because the vaccine is so new. And a lot of the vaccinations that have been happening so far have been through hospital systems. They haven't really been running through health insurance yet. What we do know is that Congress did write some pretty strict rules requiring insurance companies to fully cover reimbursement, to fully cover the cost of vaccine administration. So this is working a little bit differently than most things we get. It's working differently than the flu vaccine. Doctors aren't purchasing coronavirus vaccines. They're being sent out by the government to doctor offices. So patients should not be billed for the vaccine itself. What they might get charged for is a vaccine administration fee. This is the price for, you know, having that person put it in your arm, sending the information to a public health department, you know, following up to make sure you get that second shot. We don't know yet how insurance companies are going to reimburse that fee. I've talked to a few providers who are a little nervous it's going to be quite low and it won't cover the staff work that's involved with coronavirus vaccines, which is more than other vaccines because of the public health reporting requirements, because of the second dose. So that's something that's unknown that I think we'll learn a lot about over the next few months. But right now, it's a bit of a question mark how insurance companies are going to pay for that administration fee.
Yeah, let's look a little bit further into these so-called COVID fees and what care providers are trying to recoup. Is this also about their cleaning costs and their PPE?
Yeah, totally. So you do see some providers tacking on PPE fees to the care that they provide. You know, I wrote a story with a colleague of mine about this, and we found this is really common in dentistry right now, where they've had to, you know, really step up the PPE they use. We've seen it in ambulances and nursing homes. It's a tough issue. I think a lot of Americans are really hurting economically right now, from lost jobs, lost wages during the pandemic. And then to see, you know, a $10 or $15 PPE fee tacked onto their dentist visit can feel, you know, really frustrating. From the provider side, you do understand that those costs have risen, that they're spending a lot more money on all this protective gear that they have to wear. You know, there is a new billing code that doctors can use to bill for PPE. It was created earlier in the pandemic for this exact situation. I've heard some reports that some insurance companies aren't reimbursing that fee when it gets billed. And so in those cases, you might see the fee being passed on to the patient. We've also seen some state regulators stepped in, and a handful of states, attorney generals have announced, you know, look, you can't charge these fees to your patients. You have a pre-existing contract with the insurance company that outlines what you're allowed to charge, and that these fees, you know, are a violation of that contract. So it's a bit of a moving target, but it's something that's certainly, you know, come up as there is all this spending on PPE.
I imagine this next thing is also a moving target, but is there any estimations out there what the cost of a typical hospital stay would be for treating a COVID patient?
Gosh, you know, it really is a huge moving target just because, it's hard to say what is typical. Mm-hmm. Some people are in the hospital for 1 or 2 days. Some are in intensive care for weeks. And, you know, even that hospital stay cost, it's not going to include a lot of the follow-up care that's necessary. One of the things I think we're learning about coronavirus is that for many people, it's a long-lasting disease, that months and months afterwards, they're still dealing with the effects. So I've talked to a number of patients who, particularly at the start of the year, were getting really frustrated with their costs because their deductible had reset. And all of a sudden, you know, they've been seeing someone at a long-haul COVID clinic. All of a sudden, it just got a lot more expensive because their deductible had restarted. So I think that's something we're going to, you know, learn about a little bit in retrospect this year, how much those hospitalizations are costing. But I think it's going to be quite variable from one patient to another, depending on how much care is needed.
So we'll stay tuned for that as we talk with Sarah Cliff, investigative reporter for the New York Times. She sorts through how our healthcare system works with medical billing. And during COVID, she's been covering COVID-related medical billing, as well as insurance law changes at the federal level, and taking your situation, your questions about medical debt. 800-642-1234. Gordon is with us now from Northern Illinois. Hi, Gordon. Go ahead.
Hi. I had a motorcycle accident a couple of years ago and went to the ER for, you know, collapsed lung and broken ribs and all kinds of stuff. But when I got the bill, I wasn't insured at the time. And the hospital suggested I could apply for Medicaid. 90 days in arrears for the incident. So I did that, and they covered almost everything except the orthopedic. The orthopedic bill was in excess of what the actual surgery they did to get my lung working again, and they didn't do anything except look at x-rays and CT. But, you know, they were asking $4,000 for what? Just looking at imaging. So the bill came to me from them. It was codes. They had no idea what they were charging for. I had to subscribe to the AMA definitions for those codes. It cost me $50, but I realized they were billing for surgery and bone setting and things they never did. So I approached them on the fraud, and they reduced it from thousands to about $300-some-odd, but they also would not accept the insurance I had with Medicaid.
Okay. Yeah, Gordon, thank you for your sharing your situation. You know, Sarah, Gordon being quite the patient advocate and even getting the American Medical Association definitions for these codes to figure out what happened to him with his situation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it sounds like in that case, you know, he was pretty successful in challenging those bills. But again, I think it's quite unfortunate the lengths he had to go to, you know, subscribing to a service that is supposed to be meant for medical billing professionals just to understand his own bill is pretty, you know, extreme. But I think it does show, you know, if you have the space and the time, you can actually challenge these things and get your bills brought down a decent amount. I think another thing that's important about his story is the role that Medicaid played. One of the things that the Affordable Care Act did in 2010 was it expanded Medicaid to millions of low-income Americans who now qualify for the government health care benefits. And I think that's been really important in insulating, you know, millions of Americans from what could be some pretty devastating medical bills. So it sounds like in his case, Medicaid also played a pretty important role in covering some of those bills.
It sounds like, too, he got some good advice from the hospital to make mm-hmm. that application. And that's important, too, is getting the right advice along the way.
Yeah. And I think luckily here, some of the incentives align. Hospitals generally want to get people signed up for Medicaid because that means someone's going to be on the hook for those medical bills. Mm-hmm. So hospitals in states, hospitals have generally been big proponents of Medicaid expansion, of states deciding to participate in that program. And they are often running these like social outreach programs to get people signed up. So it's kind of a win for everyone. It's a win for the hospital because they're getting reimbursed for the care, and it's a win for the patient who's no longer responsible for those bills.
New York Times investigative reporter Sarah Cliff studies the inner workings of healthcare one medical bill at a time. She's our guide to the unforeseen costs and how patient care is billed. Have you ever gone to urgent care or ER only to get a surprisingly huge bill later because the physician you saw wasn't covered by your insurance? Have you gotten a medical bill that has charges on it that you don't understand? Still time to talk this through. 800-642-1234. Back in a minute with Sarah Cliff here on the Ideas Network. We're talking about medical debt and what we can do about it here on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Let's get back to our conversation with Sarah Cliff of the New York Times. As healthcare costs rise in our country, the burden falls on patients as insurance companies build in larger deductibles and copays. Congressional reforms are seeking more safeguards, but people's finances are precarious. According to Debt.com survey last year, more than half of respondents had medical debt sent to collections, and nearly two-thirds owed less than $5,000. Still time for you, 800-642-1234. Mike is now with us from Beloit. Hi, Mike. Go ahead.
Hi there. Thank you both for taking my call. I was just wanting to ask the speaker regarding the legality behind providers charging for services not rendered, such as in the situation of the last caller.
Sarah, yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, it's not legal, is the short answer. The hard thing is sometimes it can fall into a bit of a gray area. And, you know, an example I'd give you is, as I mentioned earlier, most medical visits, in our system are rated on a level of 1 to 5, you know, 1 being the least complex, 5 being the most complex. You see this in emergency room visits as well. And there can be a really big difference between the price of a level 1 visit and a level 5 visit. So, you know, one thing I see happening a lot is you see most visits are coded as complex. They're coded as 4 or 5. Do they actually deserve to be coded that way? That's something that's pretty tricky to figure out, particularly when you're a patient who, again, is not steeped in, you know, the language of medical billing. So I think it is certainly fraudulent to bill for services and illegal to bill for services that were not provided. But there's a lot of gray areas where, you know, it's often described as upcoding. Providers use a code that's going to get higher reimbursement, even though the services they provided didn't actually qualify for that code. Those gray areas can be a lot trickier to kind of discuss with a provider or try and get some kind of resolution on, because it's a little bit in the eyes of the doctor, you know, how they think that this should be coded.
Yeah, I mean, is that coding and that level of service, is that determined by the physician or the PA or the clinician? Mm-hmm. And where are the checks and balances on that?
So there aren't, you know, there are some checks and balances that insurance companies are doing. You know, major insurance companies are, you know, running algorithms. They're looking out for the hospital that is always billing their emergency room as a level 5. And, you know, it might take some work to investigate those. The way it typically works is you're going to have a provider taking notes on the particular patient encounter. Usually those notes go to some kind of billing expert who then figures out, okay, I can see what care was provided. Here are the codes I'm going to bill for. It's not usually the case that the provider is picking their billing codes. So I'd say the checks on this are the people paying for healthcare, the insurance companies, Medicare and Medicaid. If they see unusual patterns of billing that indicate upcoding, they may often, you know, investigate that particular provider for the way that they're coding their bills.
Let's bring in Mary now in Oak Creek. Hi, Mary. What did you experience?
Yes, I am a Medicare patient. I went to a new physician for specific problems, and the physician billed me for a physical instead of my problems. And even if she did perform a physical, why wouldn't she have billed a wellness test, which Medicare would have covered? So I'm on the hook for $1,000, and I'm making payments, and I have, like, no recourse.
So, yeah, it should get one routine physical covered per year, right, Sarah?
Yeah, that's, you know, it's hard for me to comment without knowing the exactly what happened, but that does sound like a really frustrating situation. And again, you know, one where it's hard to have much recourse. You know, one place I'm seeing this come up a lot is around coronavirus testing. Congress wrote special rules saying if there you have a medical visit for coronavirus testing, you don't have to pay the deductible, you don't have to pay the copayment. That should be fully covered by your insurance company. But doctors have to code it the right way. They have to make it clear that this was a visit related to coronavirus testing. And one thing I've seen happen a lot is that just doesn't happen. They're often sending the COVID test off to an outside lab. The visit is billed as a normal visit. And because it doesn't have that COVID test attached to it, all of a sudden they're on the hook for paying for part of that visit. So it can be just really maddening how much of this comes down to getting the coding right. And a huge frustration for a lot of patients, having to be the ones to kind of play detective and try and figure out, you know, why was it coded this way and how do I get it fixed?
One area we haven't touched on is transport and, you know, whether it is air transport, ambulance, you know, what will patients incur if there is, you know, a flight for life or other expenses related to transport?
Yeah, transport is one of the trickiest areas and one of the areas where you see the highest rates of out-of-network billing. And it's often a, you know, typically medical transport are not services you chose. Usually it's some kind of emergency and someone shows up to transport you either by ambulance or by helicopter. We know the majority of these transporters, they bill out-of-network, which means you could be at risk for a large bill. And there are new federal rules that will go into effect in 2022 that will prevent air ambulances from doing this kind of billing that are going to bring a lot of protection to people who are transported by air. Those regulations, however, do not include ambulances. So even after this new surprise billing law goes into effect, this is a law Congress passed at the end of last year, ambulances will still be able to bill out of network and patients could be on the hook for some pretty significant bills.
We're talking with Sarah Cliff, investigative reporter for The New York Times, who covers the inner financial workings of our healthcare system and the price of getting care, who is taking your questions as well, 800-642-1234. You know, Wisconsin lawmakers introduced a bill in 2019 that would have addressed surprise medical bills, but it failed to reach the governor's desk. At the state level, what more can be done to address these out-of-network surprise bills?
Yeah, so luckily this legislation that passed in Congress is going to be providing a lot of that protection that a Wisconsin law would have provided. So this is a law that goes into effect in 2022 and essentially says that out-of-network providers working at in-network hospitals, a common situation is you go to an in-network emergency room, but it turns out the doctor staffing it doesn't take your health insurance. That type of billing is going to be outlawed at the start of next year. Insurance companies and hospitals are going to have to work those disputes out on their own rather than billing the patient. The one place where there is a lot of space for state legislatures to still act is ambulances. Ambulances were left out of the federal legislation for a number of reasons, and they are going to become kind of the predominant source of surprise medical bills. You know, I've heard some state legislatures in Texas and Colorado, they're already thinking about this particular issue. You know, how can they deal with this ambulance challenge? So I see that as one clear area that kind of remains for state legislatures. And I think one of the reasons it's important that states take it on is Congress often looks to the states when figuring out how to write new healthcare rules. The legislation that banned surprise medical bills, it's modeled after a law that New York passed about 5 years ago. So how states solve these problems can really inform how federal legislators can also tackle these hard issues.
Let's bring in Dan in Westby with a question. Hi, Dan, go ahead.
Yeah, I had some work done back in November, and it is February now, and I still haven't received any notification as far as insurance or hospital bills. And I was just wondering, does it normally take that long?
What is that average length of time between the service rendered and the billing?
Yeah, unfortunately, it can often be quite a wait. And, you know, I've experienced this with my own care, with some physical therapy I had. The bills didn't show up for an entire year. It turns out what I didn't realize was going on behind the scenes was the doctor and my insurance company were essentially having a bit of a dispute about who should be paying for what. So all of this was going on without my knowledge. And then, you know, a year later, when I totally forgot it, about doing this physical therapy, the bill shows up. So unfortunately, you know, these things can take a while to resolve. I think if it's something you're concerned about, it's always worth checking in with your insurance plan, checking in with the provider about what exactly is going on. But sometimes it could be some kind of behind the scenes negotiations that are happening that need to be resolved before they're going to send out a bill.
Sarah, thank you for joining us.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me.
Sarah Cliff is an investigative reporter for The New York Times, focusing on our healthcare system, how it works for patients. And she's been covering COVID-related medical billing and what she is seeing at the federal level. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. This is The Morning Show, and you're listening to the Ideas Network.